It's the hardest when someone has really wronged you to respond with compassion. When someone has threatened you or someone has, you know, taken something from you, if you respond with animosity or just fear, fear begets fear, right? But if you respond with love, you don't give that person an option except to soften.
Hey, y'all. I'm Brian Pagan, and welcome to episode 9 of Mindfolk, Human Creativity and Mindful Innovation in a Podcast. In this episode, I'm speaking with Shireen Wafai, one of the most inspiring people I know. She's a healer, maker, lover, thinker, and creator. We met in Eindhoven a few years ago, and she has been present with me for some pretty pivotal moments in my life. And as such, this is a deeply personal conversation. We're going to get into topics like what being in UX really means, the importance of self-care, and how we can turn trauma into strength. But heads up, we do get into a pretty dark place, so if there are any children listening right now, it might be a good idea to put something else on. All right, let's get into it. Enjoy.
Yeah, we keep learning it over and over, no matter how, like, oh yeah, I feel amazing today. And then there's always a lesson. There's always something that just snaps you back into place. You're like, whoa. What had taken control of my body and my mind that all of the meditation, all of the self work I do just goes out the window immediately. Oh, yeah. But it's always about how fast we can get back to that, right? It's like, before maybe you would have been pissed off for a week, but now it's more like maybe a day or like a few hours or something. And that's huge growth. But the growth isn't that we never get angry. It's never going to happen. Even like Gary Zukav and everyone, Elizabeth Gilbert, all of these amazing people, like they get angry too, but it just takes less time to come back to your soul and to the beauty and the essence within you.
When was the last time this happened for you?
I think I have it the most when, it's like really stupid. Okay. Really stupid. It's almost like, but it's like,
be nice to yourself. Words matter.
So my husband, every time he will leave the bathroom, all the bathroom carpets will be in balls, you know, like, why? Like, I don't understand how does this happen? And so every time I go in, like, you know, it doesn't look soothing. You know, I always feel like, oh, I have to like straighten everything out so that I can go into the bathroom in a relaxed fashion. Mm-hmm. But every time it got to me, every time I'm like, oh, but now I said, that's so stupid because I was like, I could tell him, but it's not going to work. I'm just going to be like, it's okay. And every time I go in and it becomes a practice, I go in, I straighten them and then I'm relaxed. And I've trained myself so that it doesn't bother me that much anymore. But it's like these tiny little things that are so silly, but that has taught me a lot. Like that tiny thing has taught me a lot. Like blaming or being like, oh, why does he keep doing that? I'm like, you know, I don't give a shit. He can keep doing it. I accept that he's going to keep doing it. I'm just going to straighten the bath mats. It's fine. It's cool. Life goes on. Everything's perfect.
What kind of techniques did you use to make this shift?
I basically explained to myself, it's like either I can let this bother me the whole time I'm in the bathroom, or I can immediately do something about it. Can I do something about it? Plus, I can completely de-stress myself for that tiny little thing. Mm. Like I literally just go in, I see it, my body reacts, but instead of letting that take over, I just go, okay, let's take a second, take a deep breath, go in, straighten, and go on with my day. Mm. It's so much better than like holding it in and being like, oh my, why didn't you do this? Why didn't you? Like, it doesn't take any time for me to do it myself. So like to stop expecting also people that are going to change, like I'm just going to change myself. It's so much easier to change yourself. So much easier going and yelling at someone.
I love the story because it's very clear in the narrative shift that you create for yourself in your own mind.
sometimes it's better to show rather than tell. And that's what I found, that when someone is like, it's the hardest when someone has really wronged you to respond with compassion. When someone has threatened you or someone has, you know, taken something from you, if you respond with animosity or just fear, fear begets fear, right? But if you respond with love, you don't give that person an option except to soften. And that's like, you know, it's like fighting, you know, kindness. But when you respond with love, especially in a situation where someone is really trying to elicit a terrible response from you and you show up with all the love in the world, first of all, it's annoying as hell for that. But also, you have nothing to regret later. Mm-hmm. And like when there is no love, where there is no love, put love, and then there will be love. In any situation where there is no love, you have the opportunity to put love. You can just put love in that situation, and all of a sudden there will be love there. It's so simple. It's so simple sometimes, but you have to have cultivated the loving parts of yourself and awareness. That's a practice, and it takes a long time to get there, honestly. And anger basically stems from not having clear boundaries. And I come from a culture that basically says if you have boundaries, you're like stuck up or something. You're not allowed to have boundaries. The inspiration to actually start thinking about myself was actually in the Netherlands, where I lived for 7 years and where you are, people have super clear boundaries. Super clear boundaries. They're like, you know, they don't even give you a reason. They're like, hey, do you want to go for coffee? They're like, no, this is what I need. And I don't have time for you, so no. And so I learned a lot from that. Like, first I thought people were like really harsh, but I just realized it was the complete opposite end of the spectrum that where I come from. So I'm like, you know, sashaying somewhere in the middle right now.
You talk about sashaying between two different worlds. I think this liminal space is kind of a place where you thrive. And I'm curious to hear your thoughts about that.
Wow, I love that, because I think that's definitely part of my character, my personality. It's, you know what, actually, so I'm reading this book called Conscious Leadership by Jim Detner. And the most recent chapter I read is your zone of genius. So figuring out what is your zone of genius. And it's like, you have a zone of incompetence, competence, excellence, and genius. And, you know, incompetence, you know, are the tasks that you do that everyone can do better than you. So it's a waste of your time.
Yeah.
And then you have like the zone of competence where, you know, you can do something, you can do it well, but a lot of people can do it better than you. So it's probably better to delegate it anyways. And then you have your zone of excellence where you can do things better than everyone else. However, there's still a little bit of energy drainage there. And it might be very minimal. However, it is still leaking your energy. Hmm. And then you have your zone of genius. And your zone of genius means is that's where you flow. It's the kind of thing people tell you you're really good at, but you don't even consider it a skill because it's so good and so natural to you. It's like telling a fish you're really good at swimming. And it's like, of course I'm good at swimming. What are you talking about? So I did this exercise. You can go to the book and it's fascinating. And you can do these exercises where you figure out what is your zone of genius. And I realized that my zone of genius is speaking and teaching and motivating. And I don't do that much speaking. I used to be a teacher and I motivate people through my Instagram. You know, that's what I use. That's my platform, you know, my micro blog story motivating aspect of my life.
You as a UX professional probably do UX differently than someone who has something else in their zone of genius. And I guess I'm just wondering how those how those zones influence each other.
Yeah. I mean, the word, like, let's say empathy, I want people to be empowered in the way they use technology or the way they use anything. I mean, like, design isn't just online. It's like looking at a kaleidoscope. You want a team that looks like a kaleidoscope of colors that is also adaptable, and it will change and the patterns will change and you will be able to work together, and it still all fits together in this beautiful way. So now I'm involved with an organization that helps with human trafficking online, specifically for kids. And I just want to help them more than anything. And I'm right now I'm just doing, like, it has nothing to do with UX, and I'm just doing like project management for a course that they're designing to help kids know about like how to report stuff and how to not get locked and how not to talk to strangers, and helping parents, like, if this happens to your kid, what you can do, how to document stuff so that you can put him in jail. And it's honestly, it breaks my heart into a million pieces because the amount of trauma that results from, you know, this cyber blackmail. And I don't know how much detail like I should go into, but what's literally happening, because people don't know, and I really need people to understand what's happening. And this is honestly what I think I should be speaking about, is that kids will get caught into this blackmail loop with an online predator and think that they're their friends. And the predator will, like, literally ask them for money. And when the kid runs out of money, like, runs out of, like, stealing all of their parents' money and their phones and stuff like that, the predator will start asking them to take videos of themselves doing things to themselves and then selling those videos to pedophilia websites. And then there's something called online grooming, where a predator will literally talk to kids for like 6 months up to a year, and then will actually kidnap them and put them in this whole human trafficking industry. And this is happening rampantly all over the world. And it's insane. Like, can you imagine when we were kids, all we had to be scared of was some like weirdo in the street. Now kids need to be scared of thousands of possible attacks everywhere. And if you prevent this trauma from happening to one child, you are preventing trauma. I mean, can you imagine growing up like that? It's going to affect your relationship with your parents, with your siblings, with other kids. You're going to feel ashamed your whole life. Like, literally, one predator did this with 64 kids, two of which he actually sexually assaulted. 64 kids. How can one, I mean, can you imagine the damage that is being done, and we don't see it? We don't see it, and kids are going through this and they can't even tell anyone about it. And it's insane.
What about this touches you so emotionally?
It's probably because of my nieces and nephews. I mean, they're, you know, my 12-year-old niece just like got her first Instagram account. And like, that was where I'm like, oh my God. Oh no. Oh no. And then my 6-year-old niece was playing a game called Barbiegram. It's like a fake Instagram for kids that, mm-hmm. And she's like, look how many followers I got. And it's just a game that's just like, gives you random, like, it's nothing. It's like you're, and I saw the obsession. She's like, look, I got more. Look, I got more followers. And I'm like, this is the devil. The devil. Like, and it's not, I mean, and predators are getting to kids like through social media, but also through games, which is the really scary part. And I'm terrified. Like, if I can help literally like prevent trauma for, I mean, I could prevent trauma for them. Like, these are the kids I love the most, you know, they're my flesh and blood. But I mean, I saw the videos that the predators were telling the kids to send. Like, I saw the kids, and I saw like 9-year-old, like little chubby little kid, terrified, like with the most terrified look in his eyes. that's not okay. And I can't unsee that. So I don't think I can literally continue my life and not be part of that, because that's not fair. It's not fair. And I know people, life's not fair. I don't give a shit about that stupid sentence, but it is not fair for a kid to be abused in that way. So I can't, it's like, it's, I can't shake that. And I don't want to. I want everyone to have like a fair shot, you know, and that is like such a big thorn in someone's life. Like, I was molested as a kid. It was like a 5-minute thing, you know, like some random dude, like, followed me up the steps to my apartment building and, you know, it touched me in like disgusting ways. And it took me a long time to get over that. And that was like a 5-minute encounter. And these kids get stuck in this cycle for months and months and months. So I can just extrapolate the damage and the trauma and then the, you know, the post-traumatic stress disorder that they get after that, that continues and continues and continues in their life. So this is trauma that affects generations, because, you know, we have trauma from our parents and our grandparents in our bodies, in our genes, in our energy bodies. So preventing trauma has a huge impact on not just the kid, but on everyone around the kid. And for their kids and their kids, the kids. So in a country with no boundaries, like Egypt, not very many boundaries when it comes to, you know, sharing information about your life. So usually people would like, you know, tell everything about their lives and their family's lives and stuff like that. But in this specific situation, anything regarding sex has a lot of shame around it. So it's like, we can tell everyone everything, but when it comes to these things, we don't tell a soul. We do not tell a soul. So therefore, this information doesn't get out. Like so it's actually kind of the opposite. It's like we have no boundaries, but when it comes to these specific things that we really should talk about, we don't talk about them. And then we create boundaries because, you know, this will affect our reputation or the way people see us. And the crazy thing is actually the parents of those kids, or let's say 32 of the parents of the, or parents of 32 of the kids, even though they caught the perpetrator that had done it, they were too ashamed to go to the police station to actually report and make sure this guy went to jail. And so the judge, can you imagine, arrested the parents on the count of negligence and forced them to come to the police station to submit a report. That's how bad it is. That's how bad it is. That's how much like shame, blame, like, you know, shove stuff under the carpet that exists. So it's like, it's very strange. So many oxymorons.
A lot of victims of sexual abuse also become perpetrators later on.
Exactly. Because another adult did this to you and your parents are ashamed of that. That doesn't make sense. And which is why, like, we need to get this message out. Like, this is not the kid's fault. We need to empower children with information, with examples, with stories, with tools. So that's why I was like, okay, so I'm not just going to help with designing this course. I'm actually going to create, so I think the most powerful thing is to use your skills. Like, oh, I'm a UX designer, so I'm not, how am I going to help? You know, how am I going to help these kids? Well, no, you can. I thought, okay, why don't I create the easiest website, platform, tool where it's like one big rainbow colorful button where they say report instead of all these gray, tiny little links that are exist in all the social media sites, but why not create this, the easiest, friendliest, most compassionate way for kids to actually report these things? Because a lot of times, like in this culture, like, or not just, honestly, it's everywhere. Like, it depends on your relationship with your parents, if you're able to tell them or not. So if you can't tell them, there needs to be another way for you to tell them that, for you to report it, even if your parents might not believe you, or they might think, you know, this is shameful to report, but another outlet. So using your own skills right now for the most impact to help the world, to me, is like, well, of course this makes sense. You know, I can use these skills to help in so many different avenues. And yeah.
I think that's what you're doing with your Instagram as well, no?
Yeah. Yeah. Instagram is like, it's so much about like how, you know, like the picture perfect images and stuff. And I'm basically the opposite. I'm like, here, check out my frizzy hair and my wrinkles. And, and you know, like, I'm there to like spread happiness and joy and to just to tell people like what worked for me, and maybe that will work for them. Yeah, I'm just using the internet for good, essentially, because everything you can use for good and evil, everything, even the toothbrush, right? Mm-hmm. You can use everything. So you can use social media in the most incredible way, or you can use it in the most horrendous way. People sell babies on Facebook. Like, because the guy that I'm working with, honestly, he's like an angel walking on earth. His name is Rami Gibelli. He was actually like Facebook's like one of the top 100 influential people in the last couple of years, because he created this platform to catch people that are doing these, to catch people that are, kidnapping kids, to catch people that have, that are selling their kids online. And he's the one that actually brought me into this platform. And he is just like, he goes to the police station with the kids to show them the perpetrator so that they can start to feel better about themselves. He empowers them by showing them, you now have justice because you were brave and you told your story. This guy is going to jail. And like this guy is just so amazing that's why I'm like, I will help you whatever you need, no matter what, you know, because he's doing the work. He's out there doing it, you know? So yeah. Find those people that are saving the world and like latch on to them and help them, you know?
Beautiful. How can people find you?
Instagram, Sherry Be Happy is my what do you call it? Handle. And also, I just started this platform, Healers and Guides, which is a platform making healing accessible in Egypt as a start, but because people do distance healing, so you can also reach out to healers through that. So my email is shireen@healersandguides.com. Shireen is Sherin. And I would just love to hear from anyone that wants to help. I mean, I'm like, consider me like a hub with stuff that people need help with. So if anyone wants to help in any way, I'll find an avenue for you. If you want to help making healing, alternative healing accessible, you can help me do that. You can write for the blog. If you are a content writer and want to help get this message out to kids and parents, you can do that. You're a game designer, I'm thinking of creating a game for kids that's like a super addictive game that will teach you about will be the underlying story, will be to teach you about the perils you can find online. So honestly, just give me love and I'll like give you love back.
Thank you for your love.
Thanks for giving me your love, Brian. Thanks for this beautiful exchange. Thanks for giving me space, head space, heart space, hug space.
I always enjoy sharing space with you, Shireen. Thank you so much. And you, listener, whom are you sharing space with? Leave me a voice message through our website, mindfolkpod.com, or get in touch on Twitter and Instagram via @mindfolkpod. Keep choosing love, dear one.